The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we undertake two tours, one in a familiar North Carolina coastal setting, the other in Southeast Asia. 36 Hours, Outer Banks was written by Kate Lewis and appeared in the June 19, 2025 issue of the New York Times. Now, Ms. Lewis is a longtime visitor to the Outer Banks and currently lives outside Washington, D.C. And her article is part of the Times' ongoing travel series, 36 Hours. So let us begin. A series of barrier islands and land along the North Carolina coast that stretches for well over 100 miles, the Outer Banks are the setting for many a romantic novel. Yet this laid-back locale offers much more than windswept seascapes. Set among the powerful Atlantic Ocean and the calmer interior sounds, the area was home to multiple Algonquian-speaking tribes and the infamous Lost Colony, an abandoned British settlement. Over the centuries, Spanish conquistadors brought horses whose descendants now roam wild. The pirate Blackbeard fought his final sea battle near Ocracoke Island in the south, and the Wright brothers took their first successful flight. The summer season brings an influx of visitors. While fewer than 40,000 people currently live here year-round, on the average, the daily population swells to more than 250,000 between June and August, according to local estimates. In the north, the communities of Duck, Corolla, Kitty Hawk, Killdevil Hills, and Nag's Head provide a glimpse into what makes the Outer Banks such a popular getaway, with hang gliding, wild horse tours, seafood fresh from the ocean, and a bevy of art and artisans. Now, the writer, Kate Lewis, offers us some key stops as we proceed. First off, the beaches on the Outer Banks offer miles of spectacular shores and unbounded views of sea and sky. Wild horse tours provide an off-road closer look at the free-roaming horses originally brought from Spain, while maintaining a safe and respectful distance. Now, Jockey's Ridge State Park includes the tallest living sand dune system on the Atlantic. Its 70 to 100-foot tall dunes are constantly reshaped by the winds, and the park celebrates its 50th anniversary this year. Getting there and getting around, Norfolk International Airport in Virginia is the closest large airport to the Outer Banks. The drive from Virginia to Duck is roughly 84 miles, to Corolla about 90 miles, and if you're driving from Raleigh to out in that area, for example, it's about a three-hour drive, give or take on the traffic and a few other things. Traffic can be heavy in the summer, so a car can be a must. Uber is available in Duck, Kitty Hawk, Killdevil Hills, but it's rare north of Duck. Off-road beach driving is allowed year-round in Corolla. You'll need a four-wheel drive vehicle, a full tank of gas, and you must lower the air pressure in the tires to the recommended amount for better traction, among other guidelines. A permit is required from the end of April to October. If you intend to park on the beach, you can purchase a $50 weekly parking permit in advance online and pick it up in person. A limited number are available. Outer Banks Jeep Rentals in Killdevil Hills includes all necessary permits with their vehicles for Corolla. They also rent for off-road driving along the Cape Hatteras National Seashore to the south. A one-day rental starts at $325 in the high season. Off-road beach driving varies elsewhere on the Outer Banks, along with permitting and price. Now let's begin our weekend itinerary. It's going to start on a Friday, and it's about 3:30 p.m. as we unwind by the Atlantic. We're on the beach by Killdevil Hills. With sloping sand dunes, swaying beach grass, and unbeatable views of the surf and sky, the beaches of the Outer Banks are a perfect place to spend an afternoon. Beach access varies by town. Ducks are residential and accessible only by homeowners and those renting in town. The beaches at Kitty Hawk and Killdevil Hills are public and have a livelier vibe. If you're up for a drive, the Cape Hatteras National Seashore begins about 30 miles south of Duck. For a bestseller to bring along, pop into Island Bookstore, which has locations in Duck, Corolla, and Kitty Hawk. The Duck location is their largest and includes an expansive selection. Well, it's 6:30 p.m. now. Let's learn the lore. The Outer Banks has long been known by the grim moniker Graveyard of the Atlantic because of the many shipwrecks offshore. This dark history serves as a springboard to the present at Theodosia, an elegant new restaurant named in honor of Theodosia Burr Alston, daughter of America's third vice president, Aaron Burr. Theodosia's presumed loss at sea near the Outer Banks in the 1800s sparked decades of rumors and shipwreck lore, and the restaurant leans in with cocktails like the False Beacon for $19, named for the practice of deliberately luring ships toward disaster in order to plunder the wreckage. Several cocktails feature locally distilled Killdevil rum, and entrees include pork belly porchetta for $32, red drum toast for $40. Reserve a table in advance, and if you'd like to try Duck in Duck, the blueberry barbecue version for $40 is an excellent sweet and savory dish served over a deliciously light creamed cabbage. Now it's 8:30 p.m., so let's loose on a Friday night. For an evening out, try Tap Shack, a come-as-you-are open-air bar and live music venue open until 10 p.m. The ambiance here is easy breezy and eclectic. A row of pink flamingos lines an edge of the lawn, and there are classic games like table tennis and hook and ring for additional entertainment. Wines and draft beers are $8 each. Cocktails like the Aquadisiac with blueberry vodka, coconut rum, and blue curacao are $14. Now, pull up a stool or spend the night dancing. Bands play most summer nights until 9:30. Check their calendar for the occasional ticketed event. Saturday, a biscuit with fried tomato, cheese, bacon, and eggs starts the day at 8 o'clock as we savor fresh baked biscuits. Now, with numerous trees lining its streets, it's no surprise that the town of Duck is designated bird sanctuary. Start the day with breakfast beneath the boughs at Treehouse Cafe and Coffee. Their flavorful biscuits are made on-site from a family recipe. For a tradition with a twist, order the Southern Charm, a biscuit breakfast sandwich that includes a fried green tomato, pimento cheese, fried egg, a thick slab of bacon and honey, all for $16. Now, the PB&J biscuits, $11, and it's another great choice, with berry compote, take on the sandwich classic. Now, it's 9 o'clock, so let's take a scenic drive. After breakfast, we drive from Duck to Corolla. That's about 10 miles. Wildlife abounds in the Outer Banks. You might see deer ambling along the road. You'll also spot brilliantly painted fiberglass horses, part of a long-standing public art series. Initially launched to celebrate the 2003 centennial of the Wright brothers' first flight, many horses from the first series are winged in honor of the aviation milestone. Several stand outside shops and restaurants throughout the area, often with vibrant designs, such as a bright blue version painted with large-scale butterflies. A new series of horses called OBX Wild launches this summer and benefits the Corolla Wild Horse Fund. Now it's 10 a.m. We're going to watch wild horses, and we have four horses stand on a beach. Near Corolla, around 110 wild horses still roam free. Known as banker horses, they are descended from those originally brought over by Spanish conquistadors beginning in the 1500s. For their protection, rules about observing the horses are strict. A 50-foot distance must be maintained at all times. If you have a four-wheel drive vehicle, you can drive along the beach year-round to see them, though a permit is needed to park. Or book a trip through Wild Horse Adventure Tours in season at $74 per adult, whose two-hour excursions will take you off-roading in a 13-passenger open-air Hummer in search of horses, while sharing their history and following all regulations. The ride can be a bit bumpy and brisk, but the tour and ocean views are spectacular. While sightings aren't guaranteed, on a good day you'll spot horses strolling the sand, frolicking together, or resting along the dunes. Now it's 1 p.m., so it's time for lunch on Currituck Sound. Head back to Duck for lunch on the tranquil waterfront. Eventide serves sandwiches and tasty cheese boards. For a light lunch, try their snack trio, homemade chicken salad, pimento cheese, and a blue cheese spread with apple slices, celery, and crackers, all for $10, paired with an extra pale ale from the local 1718 brewing, Ocracoke. It's $8, or you can choose a board to share. Now, to savor seafood, you can visit North Carolina Grill and Bar, where they serve oven-roasted oysters topped with an innovative and delicious combination of pork belly, pickled jalapeno, and pimento cheese. $17 for that one. Now at 2 p.m., let's take a stroll and shop. Spend the afternoon meandering on and off Duck's Town Boardwalk with Switch Links, shops and restaurants along the Currituck Sound. Start at Seagreen Gallery, which sells art made from repurposed materials such as sea glass and oyster shells. Off Boardwalk, shops like the Cotton Gin, which offers seaside clothing and decor, or Urban Cottage, which features paintings of coastal scenes from local artists like Marcia Klein and Jackie Koenig, along with home furnishings. Now, kick up your feet on the handcrafted hammocks from $270 and rope swings on the back deck at Nag's Head Hammocks. Then head to Kitty Hawk Kites, which sells sport and novelty styles. A best-selling dragon version runs $43. At other end of the boardwalk, stop in at the Sea Dragon and Yellow House, linked galleries showcasing photography, pottery, and paintings with a focus on local and regional artists. It's open to 4 p.m. on weekends. And Duck's Cottage Coffee and Books. This is a cozy bookstore with its own coffee brand. 7 p.m., it's time for dinner with a view. Book a table well in advance at the Blue Point, a terrific waterfront restaurant in Duck. Opened in 1989 with diner-style decor, the restaurant has since evolved into upscale refinement. It emphasizes seasonal, locally sourced ingredients. The bone-in pork chop is a hearty pick, served with tangy barbecue sauce and thick-baked macaroni and cheese for $38. If you arrive early, head to the back bar, the Blue Point's outdoor bar, for a cocktail. Sip the sumptuous Wright Flyer, a nod to the Outer Banks' place in aviation history, made from bourbon, Aperol, and Cardamaro for $15. Or stay to enjoy the sunset and ask to sit on the Blue Point's first-come, first-served deck right next to the Sound. 10 p.m., and it's on to another Saturday night sip some brews time. Head to Kill Devil Hills for a nightcap at Outer Banks Brewing Station, a pub and wind-powered brewery whose architecture is reminiscent of the life-saving stations that once dotted the Barrier Islands, precursors to the United States Coast Guard. A 16-ounce pint is $7. Try their signature Ulsh Brew. They host live music outdoors from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. each evening during the high season. By 10 p.m. or so on weekends, the inside of the restaurant is often transformed for late-night dancing to DJs or bands, and you can check their calendar for timing and events with tickets or a cover charge. Well, we begin Sunday with the original Duck Donuts visit at 7 p.m., so let's fuel up for the day. Start at Front Porch Cafe with multiple locations on the Outer Banks. Their coffee is artisan roasted in small batches at their Kill Devil Hills shop. And they also serve a variety of breakfast pastries. Order the Morning Mission, a house blend of African and Indonesian coffees, $2.10 for 12 ounces, or the espresso-based Salt Life, which includes salted caramel, milk, mocha sauce, and chocolate whipped with cream for $5.25 for 12 ounces. Duck Donuts down the street is a must visit on the Outer Banks with several locations locally. The beloved chain was founded in Duck and has since expanded across the United States and internationally. Customize a single cake-style donut or a whole dozen from a variety of coatings, toppings, and drizzles, or stick with tried and true fan favorites like the maple bacon layered with maple flavored icing and thick chopped bacon for $2.50 for a single donut, $24 per dozen. 8:15, let's pick up a picnic. Stop at Wave Riders Coffee, Deli, and Market in Nag's Head for picnic supplies. This casual eatery has a beachy atmosphere with Adirondack and low-slung rope chairs among its outdoor seating options. Now, the Waver Rider sandwich, a chicken, pepperoni, and provolone on rye, is especially good, $11. While your to-go sandwiches are made, browse the specialty market, which has a variety of unique items like Hatteras Saltworks Seesaw. 9 a.m., we're going to take flight, take a short drive to the majestic quartz-based sand dunes of Jockey's Ridge State Park, and spend the morning soaring just above the sand with a hang gliding lesson from Kitty Hawk Kites. During the three-hour beginner session, instructors teach the basics over five guided flights down the dunes. It's $149 per participant. Kids' lessons are also available. From the top of the dunes, there are sweeping views of both the Atlantic Ocean and Roanoke Sound. There's no shade, however, so bring plenty of water and sunscreen. For a taste of flying with your feet on the ground, bring your kite to catch the breeze. And we wind up our journey on the Outer Banks at 12:30 p.m. as we celebrate aviation. We drive 15 minutes to the Wright Brothers National Memorial. It's $10 admission for ages 16 and older. 15 and younger get in free. The impressive monument at the top of the hill is erected where Orville and Wilbur Wright conducted gliding experiments, and the informative small museum illuminates the logistical challenges the brothers overcame with their flyer. But a series of modest stones beside a footpath are the real attraction. These mark the Wright brothers' first four successful flights in December 1903, the very first of which was only 12 seconds long, which helped launch the age of aviation. So there's 36 hours at the Outer Banks. Hope you enjoyed that. And from the Outer Banks, we now travel around the globe to South Korea, where international tourism is becoming popular and booming thanks to K-drama fans eager to visit shooting sites and experience food seen on their favorite shows. Now, our guide is Marie Myung Okay Lee, and her article appeared in the December 23rd, 2024 issue of the New York Times. So let's go find out what she has experienced. She says, "My parents were born in North Korea. The Korean War in the 1950s left them and 10 million other Koreans, Isang Hado, separated from their families. A move to the United States allowed them to start over and raise four American-born children in rural Minnesota. They always avoided talking about Korea, and I mostly learned about the country on my own through my research as a novelist and during a year decades ago when I lived in Seoul as a Fulbright scholar. With my father's death and my mother's final slide into dementia, I had to urge, or rather had an urge, to reconnect with the country that's still a mystery to me. I longed for a tour providing food and sightseeing, but with opportunities to find personal connection on the way. K-dramas came to my rescue. During my year in Seoul, I had been teased by the Korean Fulbright staff for my love of Yang Sak-guk serial dramas. These lugubrious TV shows were usually the purview of an at-home elder. I was in my early 30s, but my family epics with emotive acting meant I could enjoy them even with minimal language comprehension. With the advent of streaming, the shows acquired subtitles and burst onto the global scene. In 2019, a week after its premiere, Squid Game became the most viewed Netflix show in the United States and would become the company's most popular series of all time, with 330 million views to date. The second season, airing December 26th, has been widely anticipated by fans across the world. And again, that would have been in 2024. Currently, more than 80% of Netflix subscribers, the streaming service reported, 282.7 million globally as of October, have watched Korean content. They have likely watched Squid Game or the zombie high school drama All of Us Are Dead, Netflix's ninth most popular non-English TV show of all time and one of my favorites, or Extraordinary Attorney Woo, a series about Kim Bok-eating lawyer with autism that for 21 weeks made Netflix's top 10 list for non-English shows. In a nod to South Korea's growing cultural power, the Oxford English Dictionary added kimbap and 25 other transliterated Korean words to its most recent revision. My beloved Yaksugook officially entered the English language lexicon as K-dramas. K-dramas and K-pop are not only driving interest in K-food, K-style, and K-culture worldwide, but also in tourism to South Korea. According to the Korean Tourist Organization, 1.08 million U.S. tourists visited Korea in 2023, up from a pre-pandemic amount of 1.04 million in 2019. Preliminary 2024 data suggest a 30% growth over 2023. The KTO, with the Ministry of Culture, Sports, and Tourism, has been promoting K-culture tourism via campaigns like Imagine Your Korea, which feature Korean celebrities like the Squid Game actor Lee Jung-jae and the musical group BTS. For travelers eager to visit shooting sites and experience the food they saw on their favorite shows, travel agencies like Inside Asia, TNT, Kim Kim, and Tracy are happy to help. I settled on an 8-day Seoul to Busan tour called Meet You in Korea, organized by a Korean-American, Jeannie Chang, a family therapist whose Instagram, Nuna's Nunchi, Y's older sister, account covers how K-dramas can illuminate mental health issues. In 2022, she posted images of her family's trip to Korea and receiving longing Instagram comments, including from me. She created the tour. It started out as a heart mission and turned into a business due to the demand, she said. In October 2023, I met 18 other K-drama superfans from the United States, Canada, and Malaysia in Seoul. Our adventure promised K-food, English-speaking tour guides, visits to shooting sites, and commentary from Ms. Chang herself. The director yells cut on our first foray was a ride on the Seoul subway with our cluster of English-speaking foreigners following a guide holding the flag in the Hongdae station. Since everyone else was in Korea for the first time, additionally none had Korean heritage, this subway trip was utterly new. I had been in this station countless times since it was near the university where I worked in 1998, encountering its familiar, uniquely Korean sweet savory briny scents from the underground snack stalls triggered a ghost feeling like I might encounter my younger self pushing through the turnstiles with a bag of sweet potatoes still steaming in one hand. But on this trip, I happily slipped into the role of tourist. Our group ranged from 20-somethings to retirees, everyone chattering excitedly about K-dramas. I remember the names of one actress from my time in Korea, Choi Chin-sil, but still didn't know any current ones. My fellow tourgoers know the names of dozens of Korean actors and proudly showed me the spreadsheets on their phones cataloging shows watched, rewatched, planned to watch. The numbers were in the hundreds. One woman shared she was new to K-dramas and only watched 45 shows. Impressive. Well, later that day, after our dinner at Kuroul Samuntang, a homey wood-paneled restaurant that specializes in Samuntang, a clay pot soup featuring tiny whole chicken stuffed with ginseng, the tour bus was ferried to Yeouido Hangang Park, a scenic suburban landmark ubiquitous in K-dramas. The Han River encircles Seoul. In 1950, when the North Koreans invaded, then-President Syngman Rhee fled across the bridge over the Han and blew it up behind him, leaving city residents like my father, a student at Seoul National University at the time, trapped. My father once overcame his taboo against speaking about the war to recall his fear and confusion hearing guns and tanks in the distance. A recording of the president on the radio assured people everything was fine and to stay home, but in the streets, people were running. No one knew what to do. Now the Yeouido Park is one of the most popular attractions in Seoul, its riverside path gently lit at night, washed free of its grim history. As we strolled by an underpass of a bridge, now one of many, a car careened out of nowhere, stopping inches from plunging over the bank. The director yelled, "Cut!" An actress stepped out of the car and blithely exchanged her stilettos for comfy slippers and walked off to rest. We had stumbled onto a real-time filming of a K-drama, Perfect Marriage Revenge, a perfect start to our trip. A royal ancestor. From the electric freneticism of Seoul, we travel to the much quieter Jeonju, a UNESCO creative city for gastronomy 130 miles away. The regional specialty is bibimbap, or bap, a traditional dish with deep cultural roots that you might see K-drama characters eating in their homes. Here we had made our own bowls of bap rice topped with bright vegetables, arranged according to an ancient color wheel. All Korean schoolchildren know the Jeonju as the birthplace of Joseon Dynasty, Korea's longest-running dynasty, 1397 to 1897, and an era most often portrayed in saguke dramas with historical themes. Many of these shows feature the Cheongsong Palace, a national historic site that was once a stately shrine to Joseon's first ruler, King Taejo. Now, tourist shops rented us gilt-edged royal hanbok, traditional Korean dress. Our group of noblemen and women then marched onto the shrine's grounds along with other tourists and some Korean children on a school field trip. For me, Jeonju was the second chance. My parents had visited during my Fulbright, but a trip to Jeonju was canceled because it fell on Chuseok, a Korean Thanksgiving, when the roads become impossibly clogged with cars. One reason we wanted to visit an ancestor of my mother's was King Taejo. While the rest of the group cosplayed scenes from their favorite sagooks, I pondered how Cheongsong translates to a blissful land where a new dynasty originated. I later gathered some golden leaves from a very old ginkgo tree, a gift from my mother from her ancestor, stuck in a fake time warp. Driving to the outskirts of Nunsin, we traveled from the beginning of Joseon Dynasty to its end, and as it's portrayed in the 2018 show Mr. Sunshine. This romantic melodrama portrays the tumultuous transition of Korean society from a closed feudalism to a more Western-based modernity because of various foreign invasions, including that of the United States and Japan's brutal colonization in 1910. The set of Mr. Sunshine is now the heart of Sunshine Studio, a K-drama theme park, still sometimes used as a studio. Many scenes were shot in a Western-style hotel, The Glory, a real building. Actually, all the buildings on the set, including 19 hanok, traditional Korean houses, were real. Walking around felt like visiting a highly compressed town stuck in a time warp, while the signs for the restrooms in multiple languages reminded us this was all artifice. Parked in front of one building was a prop U.S. military jeep, a sight that immediately made me think of a photo we found among my father's things after he passed. In it, his cousin, who worked as a houseboy for the U.S. Army, wore a procured U.S. Army uniform and leaned on a military jeep. A tour member took a picture of me recreating that scene, probably as close as I'll ever be to my father's life in 1950s Seoul. Feeling understood. I'd underestimated how seriously K-dramas had affected my fellow tourgoers. The trip was a pilgrimage of sorts. A.J. Mayu, 43, a project manager from Charlotte, North Carolina, has watched about 90 K-dramas. He said he wanted to visualize where the actors and crew crafted the storytelling that made me feel all the good vibes of the drama. He added that as a Filipino-American, he appreciated the accurate representation of Asian men as sexy, charismatic, emotional, and strong main characters. I was surprised also that so many of the tourgoers said they felt understood by K-dramas, saying the shows pulled them through hard times, even major depression, menopause, and the death of a spouse. On the longer bus rides, Ms. Chang showed K-drama clips on the bus's screens, pointing out mental health strategies like self-soothing butterfly hug that appears in the K-drama. It's okay not to be okay. And that, my friends, brings us to the end of today's journey on Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice, all one word, .org. Comments and questions may be directed to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.